Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Tim Cyclesman Wood, editor of Cycles News and Views on Cyclesman.com. He's speaking to us from Gulf Shores, Alabama. Welcome back to the show, Tim.
Jim, thanks for having me as always.
Tim, what kind of an economic cycle are we in right now?
Well, Jim, this is a long story. You know, I've covered this in great detail in the last couple of research letters. I've discovered some things that are just, to me, profound. But what I have discovered is that there are, or there have been, six economic, long-term economic cycles, if you will, since 1800. And the reason I say 1800 is because that's you know, how far back I have the data to identify this. And I discovered that there's been, of course, like I said, six of these cycles. Well, to tell this story, I think we talked about part of this in the last interview. And what I have found is that when the, you know, there was some I had seen it, put it out, I was aware of it, and then I saw a chart from another source on the internet, and that's the only other source I've seen on this, but where the M2 data, in other words, the M2 growth rate, had moved below the zero line, so we had negative growth. And that has only occurred five times since the inception of that M2 data. And part of that M2 data was actually composite data as well. But it went back to, you know, 1868, I think. And so this has only occurred five times. Well, one time was an exception, and I identified why it was an exception. But the four times were all tied to previous economic crises. And the first one being 1873, and then you know, anybody that is familiar with market history would recognize that timing. And then 1893, the 1873 one was tied to, you know, the crises are after the Civil War. It was linked to, you know, speculation, some banking issues, just like they all are. Same with 1893, except it was, you know, wasn't linked to the Civil War. But in 1920, there was a crisis, and, you know, of course, it followed the inflationary period after World War One, and then we had, of course, the big enchilada in 1930. Well, the exception was 1958. The M2 growth rate went below zero briefly, but the filter there that I identified is that it was on the upswing of one of these long-term economic cycles, whereas the other four were on the downside piece of these long-term economic cycles. So that was the deciding factor. That's why that one event in 58 was a non-event. Well, now that said, fast forward to today, and, you know, we have talked about this, I think, and at various times in our many conversations, how, you know, the manipulation, the things that's been going on with the Fed for, you know, 20 years, and how they've been trying to reinflate, and you know, the QE programs that we saw, and, you know, after the 2009 low, and so on and so forth. Well, in essence, I've mentioned this in the past before, that all of those efforts have been to prevent fighting the deflation, fighting the decline. I mean, if they weren't trying to keep the thing up, then they wouldn't be doing what they're doing, right? So it's just common sense if you really think about it. Well, in looking at these long-term economic cycles, what I found is interesting is that in 1995, the fifth long-term economic cycle peaked. And then following that, We saw in 1997 the velocity of M2 peaked, and then following that in 2000 the job participation rate peaked, and then we had the dot-com bubble and the stock market top and all that in 2000 as well. And so that lines up with what I've always said, that was the natural top of the market. And for those of us who are old enough to remember, you look back following that decline from the 2000 high into the 2002 low, that's where the heavier-handed intervention began. And a lot of people don't even remember the things that happened following the 2002 low, but as a brief little bit of history and evidence here, you know, following the 2002 low, they due to the monetary policy, they pushed equities higher into the 2007 top. That created the most extended four-year cycle in the history of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Along the way, it created the housing bubble. And along the way, it pushed oil prices to record highs. And everybody's talking about peak oil. So we had that housing bubble, commodity bubble, and then the stock market top. And all that resulted in what they coined at the time, the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression. And that was the 2009 low. Well, when we rolled over out of that low, this long-term, I've left one thing out. Let me back up from the 2002. Let's back up for a minute. From the 2002 low, when they started, you know, the intervention there to create that run up that I just talked about with commodity prices, equities, and so forth, the most extended 4-year cycle in the history of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, that begun a new long-term economic cycle. It was the foundation for this sixth cycle. In other words, that fifth economic cycle that peaked in 95, it rolled over, bottomed in 2002, and then due to these efforts, that the sixth cycle was born with all of those efforts, with all of those things, okay, that carried us up into that 2007-08 high. All right. We go down into the 2009 low in the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression, and what happens? Well, number one, that sixth economic cycle tried to roll over. Number two, they respond to that with the exact same things, except more, that created the most extended four-year cycle and the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression, more intervention. As they push this up again, as they push this sixth economic cycle up a second time. And then we get to 2011. In 2011, that sixth economic cycle, it plateaued. And we had there's some sub-cycles within it, not to be confusing, but it plateaued. It kind of hung out there and was up and down and just kind of worked its way sideways to down, but it gave a structural footprint of a top. And we rolled over into 2015-16 four-year cycle low in equities. And so this thing was trying to top. It's building a top is the picture I'm trying to paint. And then from that 2015-16 low, commodities made a low, equities made a low, and we turn up again. All right, so we're on our way up. Well, that was a how do I say this? It was a foundational bounce, if you will, within this sixth economic cycle, but it didn't push it to a new high. But it moved up with equities and commodities. Then it rolled over and it started to come down. So the picture I'm trying to paint is you had this high in 2011. It's kind of back and forth, but in general, it's rolling over. Fast forward now to 2018. We had a market top. Everybody's probably forgotten about it. Pretty good decline in 2018 occurred. But as we were rolling over in 18, and commodities were under pretty heavy pressure into 18, 19, as we moved into that time frame and in the early 2020 in particular, but late 19, early 2020, we were literally sitting on the brink of this sixth economic cycle coming unwound. I mean, literally on the edge. And then COVID comes along, and then we had the supply chain issues that were a result of that. that created the inflation that we've seen of late, and so those inflationary pressures then once again boom pop that cycle up, you know, because it was trying to deflate, higher prices reinflated it. The increase, the upturn in interest rates that we've seen reinflated it. Now here we sit, and equity prices peaked as of January 2022. Commodity prices peaked as of last June, and there's good evidence that we have, if we haven't seen, we should be very, very close. In a normal world, we should have seen the top of this rate hiking cycle. So we're at a point where this long-term sixth economic cycle is again trying to roll.
So taking a look at what's happening in the markets, what can we expect to happen from all this?
Well, it depends on, once this, it is a ginormous bubble that people don't even recognize. In other words, for the last 20 years, 20 plus years of intervention has been so normalized that people don't realize the environment we're in, number one. Number two, if you think about it, what I'm saying is this entire 20-year period has been, it's built on a house of cards. They've done a masterful job. However, what this also shows is that it's been a masterful job at trying to hold it. And I understand the efforts to try to do that, because I think that the consequences are is that I think it jeopardizes the system as we know it. And I think that's why that we have seen such extreme measures to try to hold this thing together. So I guess it comes down to, I know that we're in a position where the sixth cycle is trying to roll over. That is a fact. But, can it be saved again? It's going to reach the point, my opinion is, it's going to reach the point to where, control is lost. And then the thing's going to come tumbling down, and I think hard. I mean, because the entire cycle has been built on intervention, the house of cards. So I think ultimately the outcome is very negative, but it also explains why, in understanding this and looking at these charts from this perspective and piecing the dots together, it also paints the picture as to why this has been going on for so long, and why it explains the bubble that it is and the actions that we've seen to keep the bubble alive. And like I've said before, no bubble, name me one bubble in history that is not popped. The problem is no one realizes that it's a bubble. Everybody thinks this is normal. It's been so normalized they think it's normal, and it's not. And here we sit at the top of this thing potentially trying to roll again.
So the picture I'm trying to get, Tim, is where do we go from here, and what's the ultimate result going to be?
The ultimate result is collapse. Where we go from here hinges on how well they can, like I said, it's been going on for 20 years. They've managed to pull a rabbit out of the hat every time. And this sixth cycle has been in effect saved three times. So can they do it a fourth? I don't know. I don't know. I don't think anyone knows, but I think the charts will guide us. The signposts that I'm watching and monitoring, I think that's where the answer lies, because if you see the structure develop toward, hey, this thing is moving on up, everything is okay, yeah, we see the structure that is positive and signs that it's still intact, that tells us one picture. If we see that it starts to deteriorate further, then that tells us another picture. So the only thing we can do is monitor it. What I'm saying is I'm telling you where we're at, and realizing this from the bigger picture, it's like lifting the veil for me in being able to see this. But how well, it comes down to how well can it be managed from this point? And I don't think anyone has that answer, but we do have the tools to monitor that. So that's the positive thing.
We'll have more with Tim Cycles Man Wood right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Tim Cycles Man Wood. Because we know it's a bubble, and that all bubbles collapse. What we're seeing on the stock markets, Bitcoin, all those things, again, a little bit of a hike so far. Is this just going to tumble?
It's counter trend or last, you know, at best, I think it's a last ending push into the bubble top. The essence of it is that we're building, it's like you can't see the forest for the trees. I've known this was a bubble for 20 years. I've known that it's been built on a house of cards. I've known, you know, looking back, I'm digressing, but I'm painting a picture. You know, looking back, you ask yourself, why, I mean, think about this. If the efforts that pushed the market into the 2007 top created the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression, why would you do the same thing again? Why? Some people will look at it and they say, well, the Fed, they don't know what they're doing. They're just a bunch of imbeciles and they couldn't run a popsicle stand. That's not true. That's absolutely not true. These guys, and I'm not defending them, I'm just saying they're not a bunch of imbeciles that couldn't run a popsicle stand. I'm saying they're running the Federal Reserve and they're doing a damn good job at it. And they are keeping this thing alive, and they have managed it. And so that is a fact. And so what I am saying is that can they continue? And I think the fact that they've done what they've done proves that it is, a dangerous situation. I mean, we're at the risk of, I mean, the implosion of this sixth bubble. And so I don't know how well they can contain it. I lost my train of thought on what your question was, but the point is that I guess why would they do these things? And the reason they did what they did coming out of the 2009 low is because they knew the risk, and the risk was this cycle rolling over. So I guess what I was trying to say was that, you know, they have fought this like they have, and they've done a good job at fighting it as they have because they know the consequences. But at the same time, I think they also know that it's inevitable because I point back to my question I've always asked, show me a bubble that hasn't imploded. So I think they also know the risk, and it comes down to how well can it be managed at this point.
So if you're managing your own risk, what do you do?
As my old friend Kennedy Gammage used to say, dance close to the door. You know, I think you have to understand the environment that we're in. And like I said, that is, no matter how you look at this, it is the building of a top of a massive, massive bubble that I see even, you know, like I said, even clearer now than ever because of this research. But the essence is that, okay, when do you know when the real turn comes? Well, I'll know when I know based on the research, based on the structure, based on what I do, based on the cycle stuff, and I can't give that answer until I see it. But that's what I do is monitor those developments to try to identify it when it occurs. And I'm, like I said, we're in the zone now for a turn. Now, does it happen? I don't know. But the risk is certainly there. And the thing to understand is you can't manage risk, first of all, if you don't understand the environment we're in. And I think the first step is understanding the environment that we're in. And, you know, to see what we have seen in the last few years, I mean, just like in my area, I mean, housing prices have more than doubled in just, in 10 years or so, more than doubled. If that's not a bubble, what is? That's not normal. That's not normal. It's not normal at all, but it's been so normalized that people don't understand the environment we're in, and that's part of the danger itself. So I think that we face far more risk here than, like I said, the average person realizes.
Hmm. Now, of course, the stock markets will try to convince you, oh, well, look, we've got a handle on things. We've had a correction. Everything's going to be fine. Is that propaganda?
It's either propaganda or it's naivety, if that's the right word. One or the other. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if someone's lying intentionally or if they're telling you something because they don't know any better, but it's one or the other. But, again, the only thing, the tools that I have is understanding structure, understanding the environment we're in, and then being able to identify it and hopefully whenever that happens, we see it. And I think we have the tools to see that.
So under this scenario, what's going to happen with crude prices?
I think, according to what here's the normal, I don't mean to avoid that answer. I'm going to answer the question, but I don't mean to pause. But here's my thinking. In a normal world, when everything deflates, it all deflates together. Under normal conditions. That's what we've always seen. That's what I've always said. I think all asset prices are coming down together. I've said that a million times. And I do think that is my number one scenario. However, with this thing deflates the way I think it deflates, could we see isolated pockets of inflationary, high price commodities in certain areas? I think that's also possible. And so what I'm saying is I do think overall we see a massive deflationary unwinding, but could we have pockets because of that massive inflationary unwinding? Could we have shortages in certain areas where maybe those prices are, remain high or move higher? And I think that is a possibility you need to entertain. But my initial overall thinking is that everything deflates together, including gold, oil, like I said, everything.
So no safe havens?
The dollar, for now, or the sidelines, for now.
Why do you think the U.S. dollar is going to hold its values? It's simply a case of somebody said it's the best-looking pig in the slaughterhouse?
Yes, the cleanest dirty shirt, however you want to say it. Exactly. However you want to say it. Yeah. Now, I think there's some problems maybe there down the road, and maybe I don't have all the answers. Maybe the unwinding of this leads to ultimately to the failure of the dollar. Maybe the unwinding of this when it bites leads to the central bank digital currency. Maybe it leads to, I think, the implementation of the new plan. I mean, let's face it, if this unwinds and the system fails, I mean, they're going to roll out a new, they got a contingency plan. So maybe that is the central bank digital currency. Maybe that's part of the Great Reset plan. I don't know yet. We'll see when we get there, but there's a contingency if I'm right about the degree of the unwinding, and I'm fairly certain I'm right about that.
If governments around the world go to digital currencies, will the underground economy create its own kind of currency, perhaps going back to using gold and silver?
Perhaps. I don't know. I don't know what the consequences will be on something like that. But common sense tells you that more of a barter thing. Hey, I have a chicken and you have a loaf of bread. I don't know. But I think it would. The common sense tells me that it would some sort of a barter parallel economy would appear at least on some degree.
Tim, any other things we should be keeping an eye on right now?
No, I don't know if this rings with people. What I'm saying, but it's monumental, and I hope it makes sense. And the only thing I can say is, if someone wants to dig into the research, I've covered it in the last couple of research letters in great detail, and monitoring it as we move forward. That's the best I have to offer.
Because Tim, I remember, because we've been talking long enough in terms of how many years we've been doing interviews. After the last crash, people said to you, Tim, I wish I would have listened to what you had to say going into 2008, 2009. This is a horrible bubble. It can't be sustained. And they didn't listen. And they said, next time I will. Are the same people again ignoring you?
I think people listen, yes. And people listen the least when they should listen the most. I've been at this long enough to see that. And the problem is that they have done such a masterful job. It's like screaming fire. It's like, how do you say this? It's like, I can smell the smoke better than anybody else in the room. And because nobody else can smell the smoke, they say, well, no, nothing's on fire. You've been saying you've been smelling smoke. I'm telling you, I see this. And the discoveries that I have found prove that it is a much bigger bubble than even I realized, and I understand why it has been sustained, and nothing has changed. It's just a bigger bubble, and so I feel like it's in. This puts everything in perspective, and like I said, I feel like I also have the tools to see it when it starts to unravel.
Or as Elon Musk would call it, a rapid unexplained disassembly.
Yes, that's what we face, except it is explained. Mm. It is explained. It's going to be unexplained to the people who don't understand it. But that's what I'm trying to say is that I'm explaining it in this research. Mm. But yes, to everyone else, it's going to be an unexplained disassembly. Exactly.
Yeah, SpaceX explosion. I've never heard an explosion described that way, as a rapid unexplained disassembly. And of course, at some point, they'll probably be able to explain the disassembly.
Right.
Tim, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you.
My guest has been Tim Cyclesman Wood, editor of Cycles News and Views on cyclesman.com. If you have any questions for Tim or any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.